there. I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program heard weekdays on 18 radio stations with 27 signals all across the Treasure State. Thanks for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook at Voices of Montana and on the internet at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
I know I say it, and I'll keep saying it because it's true, and it's very believable. The co-op model has meant so much, especially to rural Montana, rural areas. I mean, you think about it, too. There are folks running around going, where am I going to settle? How about I settle right here? And then you go, I need to build a pond. You want to help me? Yeah, we can both share that pond. And then that goes from there to what? To electricity? Yeah, you go way back. We're at the 62nd annual meeting of the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association, and talk about the very roots of building this state. We're going to be doing that today, live on Voices of Montana.
If you have Medicaid or Healthy Montana Kids, it's time to renew your coverage. Not sure you still qualify? Don't wait. Complete and return your Medicaid redetermination packet today. If you haven't received a packet yet, you will soon. Follow the instructions you receive in the mail from DPHHS or complete it online before the due date at apply.mt.gov. That's apply.mt.gov. Brought to you by DPHHS.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. And I'll be happy to pass it along to the 406 and Mr. Tom Schultz.
Thank you, Cody. Yeah, we are 406, and we love to get here, too. This is Salt of the Earth folk and your kind of folk and our kind of folk right here. The people who are helping Montana stay connected, I mean literally stay connected through electricity. I'm looking here. We're at the Heritage Inn in Great Falls for the annual convention. They got a lot of banners up here representing all these companies, the Mid-Yellowstone Electric Cooperative, Southeast Electric, Lincoln Electric, Far Side, Lower Yellowstone. I got some updates from some folks that we chatted with, and I'll share those. Gary Weens will join us. He's the CEO of the association, along with Mark Lambrecht, the legislative liaison. A bit later on, too, we'll get into this youth tour. Leanne Hall from Sun River Electric, she's been chaperoning the youth tour, which is they take members of family members and any age, probably underneath the high school years. I'll have her explain it a lot more and a lot better. But man, they go to DC and they're just all over the place. Such a learning experience, and I really love it. So we'll be chatting about that. Katie Fennings will join us from Flathead Electric Cooperative. Let's get going here with Josh Johnson. He's with Sheridan Electric, a member services there. Josh, how's it going?
Good. How are you today, Tom?
I'm doing good. I appreciate you being here. Just chatting about the very creation of communities. Montana's not anywhere without that cooperative model, is it?
No, not at all. I mean, up in the northeast corner of Montana, we're very sparsely, populated, and it's all rural communities. And without the cooperative model, being able to bring electricity to the area, it would be a sad situation.
I think there'd still be farms out there that didn't have electricity.
I agree.
Didn't have a co-op model.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's look at Sheridan Electric and the issues that you're facing. What comes to mind? Growth, I suppose, is a good issue to have, but it's an issue.
Yep. Growth is an issue, but with that, it comes other bigger issues, and one of them is capacity issues. And it's not so much like transmission lines and stuff. There's a lot of generation issues, and we're not necessarily right at Sheridan seeing that so much, but our neighboring co-ops into North Dakota are really seeing the issues.
And that is something that, from that co-op perspective, it's hard to get a handle on. You can want to get out in front of it, but it's hard to see where it's going, I suppose.
Yep, it is. It is, and, you got to look out 5-10 years from now and try to predict what's going to be happening, what kind of loads are coming into your area, if it's residential loads, which don't necessarily take as much power as, say, some industrial commercial loads or even more oil. oil is something that we've been blessed with over the years, and you know, there's still a couple drilling rigs drilling in our area.
Well, I was speaking with Colin Gardner as well. He's from Rural Electric Cooperative out of Lower Yellowstone, Sydney area. He was saying sort of the same thing, that they're dealing with, you know, there's still a lot of old generating wells up there, but there's still some new wells.
Yep.
And so you got to run lines to all those places.
Yep, we do. You know, we had a capacity issue with one of our substations, so we had to bring a feeder out of another substation in order to be able to provide power for the oil wells. And back in the day, they were usually one pumping unit on a pad, and now they're 3, 4, 5, 6 all in one pad. So it takes us a substantial amount of electricity.
Yeah, and as far as getting those lines out there, there are some existing, but when you're getting to a site where the oil is, you got to stretch almost all those lines.
Yep, you do. And generally, they're not right to a substation either. They're, you know, they're off in the distance. So
of course, those companies pay for that.
They
specifically
do.
Before those lines go in.
Yep, they do in the form of aid to construction.
Okay.
It's sometimes small money, but sometimes it's a pretty substantial amount of money.
Yeah, and have you seen that? Is that a steady sort of thing, new wells, or do they go in spurts depending on the price of oil, I suppose?
Most of it follows the price of oil.
Yeah.
You know, the company that's in our area, ideal number is $100 a barrel oil. They're still doing some with the prices lower, but not as aggressively.
Yeah.
You know, they just stood up another drilling rig here in the last 2 weeks, and I think that's a 4-well pad they're on.
Wow.
And they permitted another 4-well pad in the area. So like I say, we're seeing some activity. Nothing like the heart of the Bakken in Williston and McKenzie County, Williams County like that, but it's a good steady growth.
And when you talk about Josh Johnson, member services, Sheridan Electric, you've been there a little while, haven't you?
Been there for 23 years.
Yeah. So. What have you seen over the 23 years?
Oof, a lot of change.
Right.
You know, just my mid-career in 2016, 14 through 16 is when the Bakken oil boom was really coming on.
Oh, okay.
You know, we had to go through and do a pretty substantial upgrade to our transmission and substation facilities and stuff like that.
Was the Bakken able to pay for that up front, or did some of that have to be passed along through the years to member service customers?
It was agreed upon by all the oil companies in the area to pay for it over time.
Okay.
Via KVA charge. So depending on the amount of or size of service at the location, it would depend on how much money or how much their share was. But it was supposed to be as equally spread out through the oil companies as it could be.
Over a 10-year period?
Yep, 10 years. In fact, that charge is now starting to taper off.
Okay, yeah.
And eventually should go down to little or nothing. So.
How many meters do you guys have?
We have, about 4,400 meters, I believe it is.
Yeah.
So.
And maintaining, do you have enough power for all of that? You were talking about some of that concern, and we have noted a couple of years ago especially, there were sections that included Montana that were blacked out due to a number of issues.
Yep.
And so I know that you're probably, that's still in the back of your mind, will they do that, can they do that to us?
The answer is yes, they can. You know, and some of it doesn't necessarily pertain to the amount of electricity we're using at our particular co-op or the neighboring co-op, but it's the whole electrical grid. You know, and that all meshes together, and if one place is getting overloaded or whatever, we get called to be curtailed. And we generally only have 20 to 30 minutes to cut a certain amount of power off of our system.
Yeah, and I suppose there's a plan in place that dictates that. How's that plan developed?
I'm not really too up to date on how that plan is, you know, developed. But
you have some say in it, I guess.
Very little say though.
Because you're not a power generator.
Correct.
Right.
Yep. So the power generators, transmission companies, they call upon certain areas to decide what can be easily and fastest curtailed or cut.
Yeah. are you guys looking at maybe doing some solar projects? Or I know that's a question that probably gets addressed almost every year at convention. How are you going to do that? And how are you going to pay for it? And does it make sense for you?
You know, as far as our co-op itself, we haven't really looked at doing any solar that way. We do have several members in our area that are, you know, looking at doing some for themselves. Mm-hmm. Nothing really set in stone yet. But it's just, it's tough in northern Montana. You know, the efficiency of solar isn't that great.
I was just up there, by the way, and it felt like twilight all day long.
Yeah.
Because it was cloud cover.
Yep.
There,
so, yep, yeah. It is.
Yeah.
It is.
So that's, but are you guys encouraging that individual solar use?
Yes.
How are you
yes.
doing that?
You know, a lot of it's word of mouth. They reach out to me as member service. I'm kind of the voice between the co-op and the members. And, you know, I do spend a lot of time in the field visiting with them, and, you know, they bring up thoughts on solar. And I've finally found a company that's willing to come in and do some potential design for these members. That was one struggle that I had, was finding somebody that would travel clear up to northeast Montana. They just weren't covering that area yet.
Right, but. Yeah, yeah. But, again, that's that co-op model.
Yep.
You can get enough people together and do some, affect some change there.
Yep.
How's the rates, and how has that, do you think, affected your members? Are they steady? Are you looking at, of course, we've seen a lot of inputs go up all across the board.
Yep.
So.
Our rates have been steady for quite a few years. You know, there's talk at the board level of a potential, you know, rate increase within the next 2 to 3 years. As far as how much, I don't know at this time. But it with inflation, it's gonna have to go up a little bit.
Right. Yeah. And how and when that does go up, what's the process there? And this is going to be different than when for-profit companies raise their rates or determine their rates.
Yep. So generally, you know, at the board level, we'll do a cost of service study for each different rate class. And then it's, you know, broke down from residential, irrigation, commercial. And then based on operating margins and what we need to be able to survive, we'll do a rate analysis with our current rates and either be a base rate increase or a KW increase. And that's all, you know, the management team and the board work together on that.
That's and it's been a while, like you say, too. So
yep.
I think that's important, but we're seeing the cost of electricity. Well, into the future, it looks like it could be very expensive, I guess. Or
yes.
Maybe that's not the exact word, but there's certainly going to be a supply and demand element to it because we have limited our supply, it seems.
True, true. You know, with the shutdown of coal-fired gas plants and, you know, trying to rely on wind and solar, the open market is pretty volatile for electric, and you can see some extremely high prices.
Yeah, yeah, and I guess the way to mitigate that is in generation, isn't
yep.
it?
Yeah, yep. yeah,
yeah. Go ahead.
You know, I think we need, or you know, the generators and transmission companies need to look at new generation.
Right.
And the problem there is nothing happens overnight. It's a 5 to 7 year process. So it's a personal opinion, but I see in the next several years some blackouts or brownouts, and
it may take that for somebody to get in gear
true,
about it.
True.
Too.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Very
yeah,
true.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
Yep.
Josh, I appreciate it. Anything going on? Anything else going on? Just all mm-hmm. that
yep.
busy stuff.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Just that. You know, we're just doing construction work plan stuff, trying to minimize outages and be as reliable of a service provider as we can.
You have all the employees you need?
We do.
Yeah,
we
good.
Do.
Yep. Good.
Yep, we're fully staffed.
Yeah,
so.
Good to hear that because yeah. I know they're hard to come by sometimes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, thanks for chatting with us.
You betcha.
Appreciate
good.
That. Yeah, thanks okay. for what you do.
Yep.
Josh Johnson again from Sheridan Electric will come on back and take a short break. Katie Finnings will join us. Also, Leanne Hall will talk about the youth tour a bit later on. Get into the weeds and a lot of things. Gary Weems and Mark Lambrecht. We are live from the 62nd annual Mecca Conference here in Great Falls. Let's welcome Katie Finnings from Flathead Electric Cooperative. Good morning, Katie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thanks.
How are things in Flathead?
Growing.
That is,
if I could pick a word, I think that would be it.
We got also with us here, and this was just sort of happenstance. Bobby happened to be rolling by. Bobby Hamill with the National Association, the National Rural Electric Cooperatives Association. Good morning, Bobby. How you doing?
Morning, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate that. Dee Dee Isaacs introduced Bobby just as she was rolling by here. And Katie had the same reaction I did about your upcoming presentation, Signs of Hope Amidst the EPA onslaught.
Yes, there's not a lot, but
yeah
we got some hope out there.
We were well, I'll take anything right now.
Please tell us where the hope is, Bobby.
The hope is in the resiliency of the electric co-ops across the country. We have awesome leadership of board directors, CEOs, managers that are leading the change that we're seeing. I think we're seeing a lot of forces in a lot of different states across the country. Montana, it seems like you all have a really good direction that the state legislature, governor have been going in, and it's really making sure that they are keeping the check on Washington and doing what they need to keep the lights on. So reliability, affordability is our number one goal, and at times, unfortunately, EPA has their singular focus on environmental issues, but it doesn't always come with reliability in mind, and that's the problem. So we're working on that in D.C. and working with our local co-ops like Flathead to make sure we're getting that message to D.C.
Katie, how difficult is it, and maybe I shouldn't say difficult, but there's challenges in dealing with a regulatory atmosphere. I know that the co-ops work under sort of a different regulatory model, but you still have the EPA and NEPA regulations. How do they inhibit you? What does Bobby need to know from your perspective to go back to Washington, D.C. and say, here's what Flathead Electric needs from Congress?
Well, that's a great question, and I think, the reality of Flathead Electric keeping our power affordable and reliable to the members that we serve in Northwest Montana relies more than ever on what's happening in D.C. We're very, very impacted on a regional level, certainly, but as a customer of the Bonneville Power Administration, there are many federal forces that are impacting, again, both affordability and reliability. And, in the West, we're all on this interconnected grid system. So policy that happens in Oregon and policy that happens in Washington, these clean energy goals, that is impacting the resource adequacy that we wind up with in Montana as well. So it's very, very, very interconnected.
Well, and that's why cooperation and communication is an important part here. I'm always curious about, and I ask this question of our delegates, and it's really hard because there are things that we can do at the state level, at the local level, but when you look at the EPA and when you look at even the ESA and all those laws that are designed for good can be manipulated for maybe not so good.
Yeah.
But there's not a will in Congress. I don't think there's the confidence or the strength to get in there and try to change some of those things. Is that necessary, or are we going to be able to come up with enough tools from the state and local side to deal with some of the issues?
Yeah, I'll give you a good example, Tom. That's a good question. And, one of the issues we've seen recently is this Waters of the U.S. issue, and this is an issue that affects all of rural America, even urban, suburban areas. But as electric cooperatives, when we need to build new infrastructure, new distribution lines, transmission lines, new natural gas generation, or other even renewable projects to make sure we keep the lights on, you need to be able to move dirt. And this is a good example where the Clean Water Act federally regulates what waters the federal government has an interest in. And those are traditional big rivers flowing all the time, and ones that you can imagine that go interstate, and we should have a federal interest in to make sure that they are protected. But you have such an overreach by so many administrations that want to go as far as they can to regulate every inch of this earth and every inch of this country. And so that's something that we saw some pushback on. But really the saving grace last year was the Supreme Court and the Sackett decision. That was a case that was brought by a couple up in northern Idaho.
Yep.
That really forced EPA's hands to tighten it up. But that wouldn't have come apart. That wouldn't have come along if it weren't for a conservative majority in the Supreme Court. People getting elected over time to be able to get them in there as well. So voting really matters. I mean, who you vote for, what influence they have in terms of who's on these various agencies, who's in the courts, really does make an impact. And so that decision really tightened up EPA to rein them in a way that all of a sudden gives the power to Montana to be able to regulate the waters in their state as they see fit.
Yeah, and people say, and it does, it kind of reins them in a little bit, but it rightened the ship, I think, in terms of there was a lot of overreach from some of these federal agencies. Yeah. That's Bobby Hamill again with the national organization, the NRECA, and also Katie Fennings is with us from the Flathead Electric Cooperative. Love that everybody has like an acronym too, you know.
Yeah. See, yeah. We're full of them in this industry.
Yes. Katie, when I asked that question about does the local community have enough resources to be able to move forward if we have a frozen Congress when it comes to regulation, you were kind of shaking your head, thinking, and as you're dealing with resource adequacy, that's sort of the nature of co-ops, is that you rely an awful lot on the adequacy. Do you have thoughts about how you can be a better player or a bigger player, or they can listen to the co-op voice a little more in some of these conversations?
Yeah, I my view is that the electric co-ops are really uniquely positioned to work directly with the members that we serve. I think especially in Montana, but all over the nation, we have very good rapport with our membership. We have trusted relationships with our members. They know that we are in their backyard with the sole purpose of serving them affordable, reliable power, and they trust that we are going to do everything that we can to do that. And so that puts us in a unique position to work more closely with them on smaller local generation projects that can help with these issues, for instance. Work more closely with them on grassroots efforts where we can get some more voices in front of state governments and federal government. So I think that there's an awful lot that we can be doing at the local levels to work with our members to help with some of the challenges that we see coming in the future.
Maybe follow up on that, Bobby.
Yeah. No, I think, I mean, when you've got these local co-ops, I mean, they know their members, they know their communities the best across the entire country. And I think this is what we constantly see in Washington is a view that the regulators in Washington, folks in Washington, know better than what the local community is. And so we got to make sure that we are giving the resources, the tools to each local co-op to deal with the issues that they're facing, the challenges they have on reliability, on affordability, to serve their consumer members the best. As co-ops, we're owned by those communities, we're owned by those members, and so we want to make sure that we're reflective of those needs, and that's a key priority, and Katie's doing that here in Montana.
And distribution is a whole different animal than generation, so to speak. And so as a co-op, you want to stay in your lane, but that lane now seems to be drifting into the need to find some kind of...
Yeah, the distribution system of the future looks very different, right?
Yeah.
There are all of these distributed energy resources that are coming in to really help support and harden the grid at the distribution level. And that's where, electric co-ops are going to have both an opportunity and a challenge as we define what that relationship with our member looks like in the future. There are so many new technologies, and it's a challenge for all of us to figure out which ones to invest in, which ones to work with our members more closely on, how to design rates that encourage members to partake in those, but also protect the rest of our members from some of the risks associated with growing demand and electrification of everything. And so we are in a very transitional period as distribution co-ops right now.
I'm going to throw it open to you. Would you have a question for Bobby Hamill? He's got a keynote address upcoming here, and he's going to talk about the signs of hope amidst the EPA onslaught. That's quote unquote. And then when Bobby goes, are there any questions from the audience?
Exactly. And I will, Katie.
Yeah. So,
I mean,
yeah.
I wish I had more than two hands. That's the problem. But I can't wait to hear what those signs of hope are. And I mean, really, I guess, this is a large question, but what can we as distribution cooperatives be focused on to be the most helpful in mitigating risks of an upcoming energy crisis.
Yeah, so that's a great call. And I'll say that there are definitely some unique challenges to reliability at the distribution co-op level, too. And one issue we're facing in D.C. is a transformer regulation from DOE that is coming down that's going to just try to squeeze as much little efficiency improvements as possible. Wow. But at the risk of really disrupting transformer supply that we're already having issues with across the nation in terms of getting distribution transformers to be able to keep the lights on if you've got a storm, a major event that would go through the system, or even just building new subdivisions. You're trying to build out your system. You have to have transformers for that, and they're already hard to come by, and DOE is only going to make it harder to do. So local distribution co-ops, we've had them weigh in with their members of Congress, encouraging them to push back on that. So the voices that you have from co-ops across the country, that's one area that we can have is that power of the voice. It's when you see these bad regulations coming down from D.C., speaking up with your congressional delegation and weighing in to make sure that they know where those problems are. The other part that I'll
and
say
getting
is,
all the members to weigh in on that.
Yeah. And we had a great success with the EPA regulations, and I'll talk a bit about this tomorrow, but the EPA power plant regulations that are effectively going to shut down all coal in the country and would require any new natural gas to have unproven technologies installed on them. It's going to really threaten reliability. And we had hundreds and hundreds of CEOs across the country, co-op CEOs, weighing in with EPA individually, speaking for the communities on this. That's really impactful. So that's one major thing. The other thing I'd say is that there are a lot of resources and opportunities from nationally that co-ops can bring to bear in their local communities. We have, you know, as not-for-profit entities, it's very hard to serve these very rural areas. I mean, if you lay a mile of line in Missoula, you might be able to connect 50 homes. You lay a mile of line down in Flathead Electric Territory, you're connecting one farm maybe at the most, or maybe one ranch.
So that's
we're
changed
actually,
lately.
Yes, that's, we're actually one of the most dense areas.
You are,
So we're very, very unique in that way, but you're absolutely right. That is...
Yep.
Not how you started.
No, it's not. It's not. And that's not how still most of the co-ops in Montana are.
Yeah.
We're very resource strapped, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So you are facing that challenge where it's hard to reach a lot of the parts of these areas. And so finding those opportunities to be able to bring those resources to bear. NRECA has a lot of good opportunities to be able to connect co-ops with that. And so using those will be key going forward.
I look forward to hearing that as well. Bobby, thank you so much for that. And Katie, thanks for what you do, too.
Thanks for having us.
The 62nd annual meeting, the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association here at the Heritage Inn in Great Falls. A bit of 406 in here for midweek. Tom Schultz alongside. Thank you so much for joining us. We will have Gary Weems on a bit later on. He's the CEO. And then their legislative liaison is Mark Lambrick. We'll talk some of those issues. But I am so happy to talk to Leanne Hall from Sun River Electric. Good morning, Leanne. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great.
How are you? I'm good. Thank you for being here. I have been like just a big fan of this youth tour that you guys do. Why don't you just talk about it? You've been chaperoning for 10 years. You probably just have lots of stories about kids lighting up when they see things and they're experiencing things right there in Washington, D.C.
Oh, it's an awesome, awesome experience for kids. It is for all electric cooperative kids in Montana. They have to be either a sophomore or a junior. They do an essay. The essays are due usually the end of November or in December. This year, they have to live on an electric co-op system. They have to be a member of an electric co-op. This year, the essay that they're going to do is something based on if you could have dinner with one prominent Washington, D.C. individual, whether past or present, who would it be?
Really?
And what would you ask them?
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
So that's pretty cool, right? When they go to Youth Tour, it's in June of every year. It's a week long. We meet here in Great Falls and have an orientation, and then we leave on a Saturday and come back the next Friday. They get to meet kids from co-ops all across the United States. They meet their legislators. We learn about co-ops. They tour the national monuments, the Capitol, the Smithsonian. We go to a baseball game. It's awesome. It really is.
It's way more than just awesome, too.
Oh.
And you get to be there because for a lot of them, they've learned a little bit and they've read about these things. And then when they get there and see history sort of in action.
Mm-hmm. And one of the best things in the 10 years I've done it, because I just think it's a privilege to get to do it, it's really fun to watch them on the first day when they're really nervous and shy and not really talking to each other. Yeah. And on the last day, they don't want it to be over. They are hugging and crying, and they keep in touch with each other. And even some of us chaperones, they have us as Facebook friends, which is really cool. So we get to see when they get married or what they're doing. And today, we have a class here at the meetings that's called Co-op 101. And one of our youth tour alumni, he's a lineman now at a co-op, and he is in the class. And so that's really awesome, too.
I was going to ask you, over 10 years, and then you guys have been doing this even longer, but you chaperoning for 10 years, you probably have a story of a student who is now involved in the co-op.
Yeah. No, it was so great to see him this morning. And yes, and one of our alumni, she worked for Senator Daines as an aide while she was going to college. And so, it's awesome.
It is. Does it cost a lot?
No, co-ops actually sponsor. Each co-op in Montana sponsors one or two kids.
So the 25 co-ops that are part of MECA, each can send a kid or sponsor a child or a student,
one or two.
I should say.
So there's no expense to the kids unless they just maybe want to buy souvenirs or something. But we have T-shirts that they wear every day, so we're all wearing the same color, and everything is provided, meals, the plane ticket, the tickets to get in, everything.
Why have you guys continued this program? Why is it a good fit for the co-ops?
You know, we just want to promote co-ops, and we want our young adults to go on and possibly become board members someday or work for co-ops or know how important they are in our communities.
Okay, I'm going to ask you this question, all right, that you're asking them for the essay. If you were to have dinner with some figure, some historical figure, either in the past or some prominent figure right now, who would it be, Leanne? She's sitting here thinking.
Boy,
that's
a tough one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you asked the kids it, so.
Yeah, but they get a little time to think about it.
Right, you're
that's
on the
not
spot.
Fair.
I know.
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm not really sure right now.
I was going to torture you. Yeah.
I don't know for sure.
Okay.
One other thing that I think about our youth tour that is really neat that we have that other states don't have is we have the same bus driver, and we've had him for 15 years, and he actually. Now he's retired from the bus company, and he drives the bus for the Navy band, or the Marine Corps band, I'm sorry. But he comes back once a year to drive for the Montana Youth Group, and the kids just love him, and he is part of our group. And, that says a lot about our kids because they are such good kids, and they make such a good impression, our Montana kids, that he wants to keep coming back.
I'm glad you shared that. Thank you for that.
That's really cool.
Because I think we have a lot of pride, but it's a lot of justifiable pride in our kids.
It definitely is.
Yeah, and that's a good story about that. So, actually it's going on right now then. The people can submit. How do they just find out through the MECA or local?
All of us co-ops have websites or Facebook pages, and we have sent information to the schools. There's a video. There's pamphlets. We usually send them out. Like with Sun River Electric, I send them out to our high schools, to the guidance counselors, to the English teachers, to the history teachers. We put it in our newsletter. There's a link on our website. There's a form they fill out and do that. So, yep, and most of the co-ops do the same thing. Some of them have you come in and do interviews, which is
a good
experience
part of it
for the kids too, because they learn from that too.
Yeah.
So.
What's going on at Sun River? How are things?
They're going good.
Good.
Yeah, we've got a great group. Great group. We have awesome board members, great employees.
Salt of the Earth folks.
I've been there for 34 years, so it must be a good place to work.
Oh, congratulations on that. So I'm going to see your name up here in the, next year, 35 years of service next year.
I've got a couple plaques.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that. And thanks for doing what you do with the kids, too. I just strongly encourage folks if somebody's going to pay for your kids to go to D.C., that's such an advantage to them. I really think it is.
Oh, I think it's worth it. I think that, like I said, the kids that have gone there, truly amazing kids.
Yeah, good. Well, tell me more, okay? Next time around, all right?
Yes,
when
I
they
will.
Get done, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Leanne Hall again with Sun River Electric. We'll take a break and come on back. Gary Weens, Mark Lambrick will be next. We are from Montana for Montana and live from MECA's 62nd annual conference here at Heritage Inn in Great Falls on Voices of Montana. as we're again live at the 62nd annual Mecca Conference, safe, reliable, and affordable. That's the theme for this one, and I certainly appreciate that. We talk about energy. That's kind of how we need it. But just to catch up with a couple of folks that I chatted with, appreciated Colin Gardner over the years, chatting with him. He's been on the program before as well. He's with the Lower Yellowstone, the REC, the Rural Electric Cooperative, out of Richland County and the Sydney area. Talked about sort of the same thing that Josh Johnson had earlier in the program, some issues with substations, needing to put in new substations as well. Sort of interesting how, even though they're in an area of generational oil wells, they're still putting new lines up for oil wells in that area. And so they've been real busy with that. Also, a gentleman, it was Steve Klatt, and he's with Northern Lights. That has Western Montana, part of Northern Idaho as well. They are dealing with a lot of new service. The 20% increase, and most of that is infill in that area. So just a couple of updates as we're, again, live here from the 62nd annual meeting. Why don't you go ahead and put that on? We're live on the air right now, so let's go ahead and get geared up. Can you hear, Jane?
I can hear.
I'm Tom Schultz.
Tom,
hello.
Nice to meet you.
Yes, we have just met Jane.
Jean.
Jean, thank you.
Yes.
Why don't you tell me who you are?
Well, my name's Jean Schaefer, and I do government relations work with Basin Electric.
Okay.
Basin Electric is the bulk wholesale power supplier for about 141 co-ops in a 9-state region, and portions of Montana are one of those.
Thank you, Gary, for coming in late on this one. I appreciate it. Why don't you tell me why you wanted Jean to have a little conversation here today?
We, our association, Montana Electric Cooperative Association, got passed last session a bill to have the Energy Legislature's Interim Energy Committee study how to resolve a problem we are, a concern we have with entities that are on the grid, whether they have adequate power reserves. And so we asked Gene to come to speak to the Energy Committee last week to talk, kind of lay the groundwork, give some basic education on what's happening with the grid and organized energy markets and why they're important and the concerns we have and that type of thing. So I'd let Jean maybe speak to kind of what she told the legislature last week.
Well, did you have anything? Comments?
Perhaps I'll just set the table a little bit here. So what happened is the Uri storm back in 2021, which everybody might remember when Texas and Oklahoma were experiencing freezing temperatures and a lot of the generation wasn't working optimally. It had repercussions up in Montana where we nearly faced rolling blackouts. And so we're dealing with a situation now where we don't have the baseload generation resources that we need. We need more transmission. And so, you know, the long-term solution is more baseload generation, more transmission, but we need to come up with some short-term solutions, which is why we had to go through the power reserve study with the legislature, and we're trying to figure out what kind of short-term options can we move forward with. So we're going to work with the legislature. We're going to work with the large industrial customers in Montana to establish a strategy that the 2025 Montana legislature can employ. And that's why we asked Gene to come over and really provide some basic education for the committee on how energy markets work, the attributes of generation and transmission.
We're going to have to follow up on this, but we've got 2 minutes for some of your key findings.
Okay, so one of the things here is that, one, power markets were predicated on a mix of resources that were really apples to apples. Everything was baseload, and it was priced as such. It was a very, you know, level playing field, so to speak. We now have everything from coal to nuclear to wind to solar to, you know, and our hydro, and all of these resources are different, and they operate different in the market, and they're priced different in the market because the power market is predicated on fuel price only. So if you consider that the power market for wind starts at zero because the cost of wind has no inherent cost. Same with solar. When you look at what coal has, I mean, it is going to come to you with an inherent cost because it has to be mined, converted, and transmitted. Same thing with gas. Gas is even a little trickier because it's a commodity, and so it is subject to commodity prices in that way. It's very, very, very variable, so to speak. So the power market is changing. What's changing over here in Montana is that Basin Electric is part of Southwest Power Pool. It's a regional transmission organization. Regional transmission organizations do two things. They are about transmission and cost allocation for that, and they run a wholesale power market. So a portion of Montana, the co-ops that Basin has in Montana, would be members of SPP. They are exploring advancing an RTO over here on the west.
Oh.
So we have an energy imbalance market, we have a potential full-on RTO, and a couple of other constructs going. Right now, we have what's called the energy imbalance market, and many who are not in the RTO are doing the energy imbalance market, but they could go further into an RTO. To further complicate this for you, there are 66 balancing authorities, and that is who does the scheduling, the frequency monitoring, and everything that's happening over here on the grid.
Gene, we're going to run out of time.
Thanks again for joining us for the podcast, and join us daily Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on local stations all across Montana.